Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Ariel Helwani, host of the MMA Hour on the Vox Media Podcast Network. Each week, we interview the biggest names in the world of mixed martial arts and beyond. So tune in live every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern over at MMAfighting.com or download the show afterwards on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and wherever you get your podcast. We'll see you then.
The flavor that Joel brings, you know, is a competitiveness. It's not as much that he's angry or upset. It's that, you know, there's a competitive flavor.
I swear to God that the LaCroix is always running out.
Good. So, that wasn't part of the whole good food category.
I was gonna say good. It should be right now.
Well, it's just like I never have any in my fridge, and I think that's the fault of somebody at Vox Media. I think that's
you have to steal two every day. That's what I do. You drink one, and that way you accumulate an extra.
Where do you put the
right,
stolen one?
There's none to steal.
Where do you put the stolen
Dallas
one?
Office.
What'd you say? Mike?
Where do you put the stolen one?
I take two. LaCroix home every night.
Oh, home. Okay, but they're out of the refrigerator for a decent amount of time. Do they skunk?
Does water skunk?
It's not water. It's seltzer water, isn't it?
Yes.
Shitty water.
It's water, brother.
Are you
kidding me?
Water, Freda.
It's like if you took water and made it way more than it should be.
This is staying in the podcast.
Why does anyone drink this if that's all it is? Why not just drink water?
It's so pretentious. It's shitty water. Water doesn't need to be improved.
Yeah, it's age old. There's no doubt about it.
Water is probably the most perfect thing that's in nature.
My parents made me pretentious with water. We grew up with we had like a separate water spout on the sink that was a reverse osmosis. And so I fully blamed them.
Yo, Tim, same. I had the same thing.
Like when I drink tap water, like there is a taste, I guess just like the metals or whatever. I know it's safe to drink. Like that's not my concern, but there is like a very small taste to it.
No, there are like certain waters that taste different. Like certain bottled water tastes different. Like certain bottled water tastes different from each other.
I agree.
Yeah, bottled water tastes better.
It's still somehow. Water.
It's still water.
Can you describe the differences?
Usually tap water has like a metallic taste or something like that. It's safe, but it's more of a metallic taste or something.
Like you can feel that it's ran through like metal.
Yes.
Like, taste it.
Yes.
Okay.
I definitely can't taste that,
but sure. Whitney, does this make any sense to you?
I straight up drink Coke Zero, so.
No water. Just skip straight to Coke Zero.
I got nothing.
It's like my wife and iced tea. She just skips the water and goes right to the iced tea.
Big iced tea fan?
She's a big iced tea
fan. Which brand?
What's it called? The big...
Arizona?
Yeah, Arizona. Arizona...
It's like crack.
Yeah, but not the kind, it's like, it's the no sugar kind and like the no added, what's it called, no added honey or whatever.
Ginseng.
Like Arizona Zero. Arizona iced tea without like the Arizona iced tea.
Arizona Zero.
Arizona Zero. Which also describes the Phoenix Suns organization.
Wow.
Yikes.
Okay. All right.
Welcome back to the Limited Upside Podcast. I'm Ben Epstein, joined by Mike Prada. We're sitting even closer together now than usual in our new, putting air quotes up, studio.
Should we hold hands?
Nah, we could if we wanted. I could put my arm around you, for God's sakes. That's how close we are. But
well, maybe you should, man.
We'll wait till the Sixers and Wizards are playing in the Eastern Conference Finals. but I'd be remiss. Mike, we have a few members of the NBA staff here who have been covering the playoffs night in and night out. Joining us, you want to introduce who we got here and tee it off?
Got Whitney Medworth, SB Nation NBA assistant editor and Pacers fan extraordinaire. We have Tim Cato, SB Nation staff writer. Thank you for saying what's up, acknowledging that. We have SB Nation staff writer, big Mavs fan, also has been around Houston a lot. And we have Zito Matu, who, because I've been enjoying his work recently, I'm going to acquiesce and call him the director of vibes, as he prefers.
Thank you.
So.
You'd be remiss to not say, and Lakers fan. Everyone's getting their fandom put out there.
Only good teams.
Oh, okay.
Only if you're a fan of a good team.
You don't need to bring that up.
All right. But actually, I did say Mavs fan, so that
probably and Pacers fan. But we should start with Whitney, because I think, look, the first round has been exciting so far. The ratings are way up. There's excitement in a lot of new cities, or at least cities that haven't had playoff basketball in a while. And one of them is Indianapolis and the Pacers. Obviously, first game was on the road. They stole home advantage from Cleveland. And Whitney, as you're watching that, and in general, talk me through your emotions and what you're thinking so far about this 1-0 series that we have with the Pacers taking home advantage from Cleveland.
Yeah, well, all season I've been, like, trying to hold back from, like, screaming from the rooftop that, like, Victor Oladipo is good and the Pacers are good, because, like, good things don't happen and at any moment I felt like it was going to change. And now I feel like after game one, I'm getting dangerously close to like letting those
restrictions off
go and just like yelling from the top of the rooftops that the Pacers are good. It's been like, I mean, what you guys saw Sunday was literally what we've been watching all year. And it's like astonishing to watch every day and every game. You're like, is this going to keep going? And it does. So I still have like this big LeBron dark shadow hanging over me, and Cavs are probably still going to win the series. But like at some point I'm just going to have to accept that like this is the Pacers' reality now. Like this is who they are.
Can I ask you to comment on that? Do you in your heart of hearts, not because you're on the record here or you might be writing about it at some point one way or the other, but do you actually think the Cleveland's still going to win this series? You're a Pacers fan. Take off your I'm an objective sports writer. Do you think the Pacers are going to win? Be honest with us.
Yeah, because as I think I saw a stat yesterday of basically teams versus LeBron in the past 15 years or something in the playoffs. And the Pacers have more wins than anybody. Like the Pacers have beat up on LeBron more than anyone, and they still haven't really come close to beating him. So, no.
Okay.
I don't think the Pacers can win. I think LeBron still will, but like it does feel like we have a chance to at least continue to make some more noise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, last year the Pacers didn't even win a game.
Right.
Yeah, wasn't that the most, the tightest 4-game sweep ever?
It was a 16-point difference between all four games. The Pacers won by 18 on Sunday.
And how about playoff V? I enjoyed how you put it. I thought that was like awesome poetry to Oladipo and George both having massively huge games on the same night.
It was good for me because I'm the fan who I'm really excited for what the Pacers have, but I still like Paul George. So it was pretty nice to just have them both go off and both be really great on Sunday, because I didn't really want to hear any more of the who's better.
But Victor Oladipo's better.
I do want to stop for one sec. Mike, you did a little piece on Oladipo that I thought was quite interesting, man. Can you just talk me through like a little bit, if we were to encapsulate what made that performance in game one sort of like a microcosm of what we've seen from this guy all season?
It's the same football term, closing speed.
Mm.
You know, he reminds me of a really good defensive back. And I don't watch much football, so I'm not quite sure why of a great so defensive back. But, you know, he does these, like, really short, contained bursts of speed and then stops. And then bursts of speed and then stops. And it's weird. I I said this like snarkily in the piece, but I think like a real gauge for how much you paid attention to the Pacers this year was if you kind of went into that series being like, oh God, Bojan Bogdanović can't guard LeBron. They're screwed.
Right.
And it's like, no, that's kind of the whole point of how they play. Like, it's very Golden State-like in terms of the best player defender is the one that guards nobody, not the one that guards somebody. Right. You basically have people that sort of hold the line in the trenches, and then this defensive back, this blitzing, you know, bone-crushing, hitting,
yeah,
you know, closing speed dude, like the Tyrann Mathieu of the league. I don't know. He's a good safety. Earl Thomas. Right. Is Earl Thomas the best safety?
These are free safeties, but yes, they work.
You could just use like Ed Reed, right? Because he's the staple for it. He always is.
Yes.
Ed Reed. what Sean Taylor used to be, I remember him, was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we just gonna see how many football players so far? So
basically,
tired guy, a deceased fella, and what else do we have here?
Eric Reed, isn't he the one that nobody will sign because the NFL backwards?
No, it's because he's not good enough.
Yeah, right.
Just kidding.
Anyway, but it's like that style of player where there's someone else that's sort of doing the dirty work, and these guys sort of, and Oladipo plays the role of the one that flies in and makes all the plays.
Yeah. I mean, the football analogy there is when you have a really good D tackle who keeps a middle linebacker clean. That's the analogy. But regardless, we don't need to get into all these other sports.
I thought I had my football analogies on point until you had to like go out there and pour cold water.
As someone who watches all sports.
But it's fun to watch, man. I mean,
yeah.
So I'm curious for the other two folks here. Like, how surprised were you about that game? Because, I mean, like Whitney said, it's kind of what the Pacers have been doing. Like, I didn't think they'd win by 18 in game one, but I thought that would be a tight series just because, you know, I've seen a lot of them and I know Cleveland's got some issues. Like, did that really surprise you? Be honest.
I just cannot believe that Victor Oladipo is this good. You know, it's just like there's not a lot of comparable situations where a player goes for 4 years while looking like not even a starter, maybe a pseudo starter on a bad team. You know, he was fine in Orlando, but at no point did he look like he was going to break out to be anything like he is now. And he's legitimately probably, you know, top 15 player in the league. I think what he does when he does back up, like you said, he backs up almost to the half court line and just speeds up there. It's just incredible. He doesn't take like necessarily a good shot selection of two pointers. You know, he does have a lot of pull up twos and stuff mixed in there, and he's still hitting 58% on twos this season, which you know, the regular season, which is just incredible. You know, that obviously points to the ability that he has to get to the rim and stuff like that. But you know, that pull up jump shooting, you know, we saw it to an extent, but you know, he was actually pretty solid in Oklahoma City, and I guess it definitely wasn't used enough or used in the proper manner. But you know, the reverence that Cleveland was giving him when he was backing up on those, and how, you know, the entire team basically had eyes on him, and how they legitimately play defense against him differently than you know, pretty much any other Pacer, than any other Pacer on the floor. You know, they had the Oladipo defense and pick and rolls, and then they had other defenses, and that just, you know, at no point would I have thought that leap was coming.
I could see Larry Nance, you know, what you feel like when you see like something coming at you and you can't get out of the way, like you're bracing yourself, you're like going on the back foot and you're just like bracing for impact. That's what Larry Nance looked like guarding Victor Oladipo on switches. He was like,
I was real quick on Oladipo too, like his body control and fluidity around the basket is something that when he came out of Indiana, there was still like rigidity to the way he was around the hoop.
If you was in the NBA too,
yeah, for sure, I'm saying, but like that was a big thing. It was like, this guy's got ample athleticism, but how does he mold into a better scorer and finisher? And he's so fluid around the rim now. His touch with both hands is exquisite, and that is a jump that he literally made over 1 year. I mean, he gives a lot of credit to Westbrook,
Which I think is interesting,
which is a very fascinating thing, and I'd love to get Whitney's thoughts on that too. But you know, I the way that he finishes with both hands and maximizes his athleticism, he's a really good quick jumper, so he gets on top of bigs before they can meet him with verticality, and like those are like top-notch NBA talent moves that he makes. That you know, again, I've already been on the record many times apologizing for my horrible takes on the previous years of his career. But I just, that's something that's always fascinated me. And then when you throw in that ability to pull up on a dime and really elevate, like, yeah, I mean, he's a pretty total offensive player.
Looked at before and after pictures of him from last year in OKC to this year. Like, it's shocking how different he looks.
In what ways?
An extreme body transformation.
That's everybody keeps saying that, and I think that's the only thing that can really explain this, you know, not unprecedented, but certainly, you know, there are not many instances of a player just suddenly becoming, you know, going from the player he was to the player he is now. And I think that, you know, just truly remarkable, you know, body improvement over an offseason is the only thing that really changed from last year to this year to kind of explain, you know, not everything he's doing in Indiana is different. You know, I think he had a lot of these skills and they were not used properly in Oklahoma City and, you know, going back further in Orlando because it's Orlando and because Oklahoma City had Westbrook next to him. So some of it is situation, but obviously it's not all situation. I think the only thing that can kind of explain that is his you know, his body transformation, which is very, very, like, visible.
And that's a real thing too. And I'm not going to get out of this series quite yet, but that's something that, you know, when we were talking to Sarah about Miami and she wrote about it, you know, Dwayne Wade is in the best physical shape he's been in a long time. And you saw that play out last night in the Sixers game. He's fresh when it comes to the fourth quarter and his legs are under him for his jump shot. There's arc on the ball, et cetera. Real quick though, Zito, what's Cleveland going to do differently in game two that's going to potentially bring this series to maybe that 1-1 and with the momentum back in Cleveland's side?
Not play Jeff Green as much.
Oh, he was so bad. It's like how at the end of the year, I was like, oh boy, Jeff Green's really been a nice fifth starter for them. He's been that swing guy they had. And then the playoffs comes like, ah, Jeff Green, that's right.
So, okay, so then in Jeff Green's place, go ahead.
Yeah, who plays in Jeff Green's place?
That's the question. That's the whole point. We don't have a lot of good players.
I don't know. You could just probably put like a human body or a cardboard cutout of a person and then just have LeBron use him as a decoy instead of just having Jeff Green waste your offense.
Yeah, I've never seen a cardboard cutout take an ill-advised three. So
exactly.
It's true.
So, it's like addition by subtraction, right? Just as long as Jeff Green isn't out there.
Yeah. It's pretty brutal.
Any more tactical?
Oh no, that's very tactical analysis, I suppose. You know, don't downplay what he said. They miss a lot of open threes, I think. I mean, like, definitely that 18-point margin, them scoring 80 points, like, credit to Indiana, but I would think that that's not going to repeat itself. So it may not have to necessarily do anything super differently. They got to get Kevin Love back to being – I mean, the whole thing about Cleveland and the reason they always beat East teams is – well, one is LeBron, but the other is that nobody in the East can guard Kevin Love normally.
Yeah.
Because he plays the – they put him at the five, and he spreads out your big guy, and none of them can do anything. But Indy has, like, the one front court. You know, Thad Young was, like, the unsung hero of that game, I thought. Because
that's the story of his career, man.
He locked down Love, and Love only took how many shots in that game? Like, 8 shots?
I don't have it in front of me. But
don't we always have this conversation, like, every year in every playoffs with Cleveland?
We do,
like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, you need to get Kevin Love going. You need to get Kevin mm-hmm. Love going.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a repeated thing every single year that we talk about.
Yeah, it's right up there
Isn't it the different
no aspect? Kyrie this year,
exactly. Yeah. That's the difference. Is it like they actually will lose if they don't get Kevin Love going? In the past, It was like, we need to get Kevin Love going because when we play Golden State in the final, he's going to be important. Like, it was like,
and then he never plays, you know,
except for that one year.
Because he can't.
All right. Well, we've spent a good chunk Go ahead, Tim.
I just wanted to make a semi-transition, if I may, because I think that Cleveland missing threes and the Rockets missing threes, a lot of that reminded me of each other. And I think Houston's a better team, and that's why they won, and Cleveland lost. But both teams, I think, will have some regression to the mean.
Yeah, let's get into that that Rockets-Timberwolves series. Yeah. Tim, what were your impressions of that on-the-scoreboard close game one?
It was surprising in the sense that, you know, I think that I want to say Houston got out to maybe a 10-point lead early in the first quarter, maybe mm-hmm. like a 12, 13-point lead. And it seemed like that was just going to be the game. And then it was very strange to see it, how it ended up. And then obviously the ending was as baffling any ending I've seen in quite some time. But I also just saw a Houston team that played by its standards and shot 3 of 25 outside of James Harden. And, you know, Houston is not the best three-point shooting team in the league. In fact, they don't want to be. I had an assistant coach telling me where, you know, if they're at the top of the league in three-point shooting, you know, that means they're not taking enough of them.
Interesting.
But, you know,
okay.
When you take 25 threes every once in a while, every once in a while it will backfire against you. And I think it backfired and that they're still a good enough team and they have James Harden, so they won anyway. They're not going to shoot 3 of 25 on you know, non-Harden three-point shooters the rest of the series. So I don't think anybody in Houston should be concerned at all about what happened in game one.
So we think it's basically that's it. There's nothing that Minnesota necessarily did that would scare you, if maybe not for this series, but for down the road potentially. I mean, I thought it was interesting how nobody else could do anything other than Harden. I mean, Harden basically willed them to the win. I mean, Capella had a great game, but that's all Harden. You know,
seems like an MVP performance.
It's like he's the best player in the NBA this year. Yeah, it's
yes. Chris Paul was unbelievably bad, but I didn't think that it was anything Minnesota did. I just thought he was unbelievably bad. I mean, it's like, look at that last turnover he had to set up the awful Jimmy Butler attempted game winning two-pointer, game tying two-pointer.
It's his anxiety, right? Like being in the playoffs, he just regresses to this, like.
He doesn't, though. He's very good. He has a couple
of
very
makes those mistakes.
He has made a few of those mistakes in weird moments. But he also has a game winner in game 7 against the San Antonio Spurs when the Spurs were supposed to win the finals in, I think, 2015.
The Spurs weren't supposed to win the finals that year, but I take your point.
Well, all right.
That was the first year of Golden State. But yes, no, you're right.
Some people, some people were saying they were going to win the finals over Golden State. There was a lot of Golden State disbelief that season.
It's just bizarre, like with the mistake. It's just so bizarre that he always, like, not always, but like he has such a stash of those mistakes or those like last minute bumbling whatever. Where it's like, oh, Chris Paul is amazing. I know Chris Paul is amazing. Why did he just turn that ball over when the game is like? When the game is on the line, or how did he just forget how to pass the ball all of a sudden?
There's an Oklahoma series a couple of years ago that was
very.
Wendy, does Minnesota bum you out as much as it bums me out? They bum me out.
No, because I never cared about them to start with. I just don't have a lot of faith in them. I've never been like a Thibodeau Bulls person, and then they signed Derrick Rose. I feel bad for Cat. I'm a big Cat fan. I feel bad for him, but
yeah.
Whitney, could you please tell him that if he has a point guard defending him, that he doesn't need to pass the ball away?
I have no idea what that kid was doing.
Like, if you are like 700 feet tall, and you're being defended by like a really short person, and you're just giving the ball away.
That's because Derrick Rose was shooting the ball every time he touched it.
I'm trying to imagine what my reaction would be if I was Karl Anthony Towns and I had this switch and I like ran to the block for a second and I saw Jeff Teague or Derrick Rose or Jamal Crawford for the 700th time in a row do the old wave out of the way thing. I might like literally like tackle those guys and just take the ball myself. If that's what
that's
came to.
That's the problem. He won't do that. He'll just like move out the way for them.
He's too nice.
Yeah, he needs to choke Derrick Rose in the huddle. Just grab him and just choke him out.
Wouldn't be the first choking
like
in Minnesota.
Joel did to TJ McConnell.
That was out of love, number one.
Yeah. Well, this is out of love, too. I love to do something that will make us all better.
Well, just the irony that Derrick Rose is playing significant minutes for any team right now. Let alone a Tibbs team, let alone a team where he shouldn't have the ball at all in his hands, is like, that's bad coaching.
Would he play significant minutes for any team that wasn't a Tibbs team?
No, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's the irony here is like, this is the only spot in the world or in the professional NBA world where he could be playing. And he's not just playing, he was the top usage rate on the team in the face of like multiple NBA All-Stars on their team. It defies logic.
The explanation to game one is that Derrick Rose monstered Chris Paul's powers, and I think that just explains everything. But also I will say that Houston's defense, you know, like it was, they knew what they were doing to an extent. You know, they knew that they were going to give Derrick Rose as many chances to take the shots that he wanted to take. And I think over the course of the series, that's going to work out for them. You know, if he keeps taking these shots, you know, And I would say that Towns is also in some instances not, you know, not comfortable against these, like when he gets the ball in a good matchup for him, you know, when he has positioning, you know, he's very good. But he often struggles to get there. Doesn't seem comfortable kind of, you know, bodying with people down low. Many young bigs have this, but I don't know if he's perfected the passing out of the post yet.
Are you calling him soft? Is that what you're doing?
I don't think I'm calling him soft. No, I mean,
it was his first playoff game.
Soft is a really dumb term, you know, in my opinion. It just means that he's not good at using his size.
So tactically, what kills me is that, Tim, you followed the Mavs for a long time. You know that eventually when Avery Johnson's got there, when they would switch someone onto Dirk, he'd just go into like the free throw line and then he could see everything and just shoot over everyone, right? That was sort of their antidote. Karl Anthony Towns should eat at the free throw line, the pinch post. Like that, whenever there's a switch, like that's the first place they should go. Instead, he would just like sort of mosey over the block and they'd try to swing the ball and it would just be so easy to deny him. And then if they even got to the point where they did all that, like if it wasn't just the guard waving him off, like wouldn't it make so much more sense if they just posted him at the free throw line against the switch? It bugs the crap out of me.
I will say Dirk didn't learn how to do that until he was 26, 27, 28. I want to say it was it was probably really the 2007 season. They obviously lost infamously to Golden State, but that season is really when his ability to beat smaller guys and pass out of doubles and stuff like that, you know, really reached its peak. And he kind of rode that the rest of his career. But yeah, just run pick and rolls with him too. Like anything, like, yeah, use those mismatches, run pick, like just get him shots. He was not used enough in any manner.
Yeah, he wasn't. Is it kind of akin to like what Weber was for Sacramento back in the day?
Well, it's funny you say that because Weber was complaining like crazy on the broadcast about this. Too. I could sense his like personal frustration.
Right. Chris Weber does tend to complain a lot on the broadcast, but he does. I'm just saying. But anyhow,
That was only a 3-point game.
Yeah, I mean,
that was like the weirdest game. I have a lot of trouble making sense of that game.
Well, it feels like that's the series that if anybody picked a sweep in any first round series, that was the one, and yet that was one of the closest game ones, aside from Boston and Milwaukee. Who went into overtime and
I Portland. Don't want to watch any more games from that series. It's awful.
And the Portland Pelicans game,
which was great.
Yeah, I mean, so we didn't want to talk too much about the games or the series that are going to be played tonight, as we'd love for this content to live a little bit longer. But I do want to touch real briefly on Mike's last comment, as I know that Celtics fans are pretty passionate about their team, and they tell you that game was exactly how they wanted it to go.
Well, yeah,
it was
of course.
A beautiful Celtics game.
It's beautiful for the Celtics.
I made a mistake. I have to be honest. I watched it on the Comcast New England feed, and Tommy Heinsohn, and this is just who he is, but it was on another level for this game.
I find him amusing. Do you guys like Tommy Heinsohn?
In small doses.
I didn't ask you, ask them.
Okay.
I was Boston for a while, and it's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah.
A lot.
Zito, I'm assuming you love him?
No. I only like the Patriots out of Boston.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I don't like anything else about Boston. I don't even like going to Boston.
How did you become a Patriots fan?
Well, they're really good.
I moved to the United States 1998 and didn't really start watching TV until like 2000, 2001.
So you followed the good team.
I became a Lakers fan as well, just because like national games.
It's fair.
The team that's like popular. When you're like, I'm a kid who came from Nigeria, a small village.
Right.
So, like, the most popular then was, like, what I was gravitating towards.
Okay.
That's pretty valid.
Now you're trying to make me feel bad for making fun of you for running a good team.
Yeah, well, this is an immigrant story. Okay.
I mean, it's funny because, like, the thing that caught my eye was when Giannis did foul out, Heinsohn was like, about time, 85th foul of the game. And it's like a little bit of hyperbole there.
It's a shtick. It's a shtick. It's funny.
But what I like about it though is that he yells it. Like he's like that old guy who can't really hear his inner ear, so he's like screaming.
Doesn't that make it more shticky though? That's why I like it. Like if he was seriously, like the problem is
he's serious though.
But it's like the problem is more like the Rockets commentators, where it's like they're very or the Spurs, or like Clyde Drexler or whatever, or like the Spurs, where it's like they couch it in like what seems like rational analysis, right. They're legitimately upset. Like Tommy kind of makes a game out of it.
That's he's the old guy shaking his fist at the cloud, you know. okay. Well, I don't want to talk too much about that series. We'll get to that in a.
I'm sorry. The Bucks make me really mad. The Bucks kind of like the Timberwolves do. It's like they go 46 minutes without playing the one lineup that Boston cannot stop, and then they go to the end of the game, and what do you know? They score every time. Wow, well, I'm stunned.
Is that the Bucks or the coach that makes you mad then?
Well, it's the coach, but I mean, this was the case with Kidd too. It doesn't matter who the coach is.
Yeah.
I guess it's the same stuff. Anyway, I don't want
to talk about it. Okay, let's go to another thing. Because, Mike, you and I had talked about in a previous podcast if the top three seeds in the East and West could pick their opponents, who they would be. And I said that I thought Golden State should pick San Antonio. And it was not like you were like, no, that's the worst thing in the world. But I think you had a different selection for them at the time.
I eventually had the same one, but it took me a second to understand.
So tell me why this series right now is kind of playing out like, yeah, Golden State would have preferred to have this matchup.
Zito pretty much said in his piece today, like, Spurs are – I'm going to have a hot take here. I'm curious what other people think of this.
Zito,
I think the Spurs are the worst team in the playoffs this year.
What do you guys think?
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when your creativity has to come from like a 40-year-old balded man, that's not good. Parker barely even gets minutes now, right? Like you're starting DeJounte Murray and like Manu Ginobili has to be your creative hub. Like I love Manu and he's amazing, but he's 40 and you can't expect him to just like replicate that every time.
Yeah.
So
he really is 40 too.
It's pretty dire for them.
Yeah. I mean, he's the only player in the team that can run spread pick and roll. I think it's really telling who they give the ball to. Each team gives the ball to at the end of these quarters, because that's sort of the one possession where it's like we need our guard to sort of give bail us out and make a play because you want a whole clock. All these other teams have these really good players and superstars that can give the ball to, and the Spurs just give it to Manu Ginobili, who's 40 years old.
They do.
To me, that's like the most telling thing. Does everybody else agree that the Spurs – anyone strongly disagree that the Spurs are the worst team in the playoffs?
I think in a series they could still beat Minnesota, but I don't know if that makes them a better team than Minnesota. If that makes any sense.
Feel strong, but I mean, they don't look great. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I would probably, you're right. They would beat a lot of these teams because a lot of these teams that are worse are stupid.
Right. But like the Bucks.
Like the Bucks and the Wizards, but they would, I think they are by far the least talented team in the playoffs.
Well, that may be. Talented and being the worst team are different, for sure. They definitely
they're the worst against good teams.
I mean, they were one of the least. They were probably, I mean, at least Denver is more. Actually, let me start that question up. Mike, would you have preferred to see Denver playing in these playoffs instead of the Spurs?
Yes.
Yeah.
People got mad at me when I said that, but come on. we haven't talked at all about the Kawhi situation yet. Do you guys think that Greg Popovich was subtweeting Kawhi Leonard when he was effusively praising LaMarcus Aldridge?
He had to have been.
Yeah. I think so too.
He's too smart to know to not know that would have been taken the way it did, I think.
Yeah. Who saw this coming though, right? Like who would have thought a couple of years ago that we would be in a place where Popovich is subtweeting Kawhi Leonard?
Yeah, of all the things that happened in this TV show that is the NBA this season, this is like the best twist or the most surprising twist, I would say.
Like Kawhi is the villain now.
It's odd that Kawhi's not with the team, right? Like, it's fine that he wants to sit out and rehab. Isn't it kind of weird that he's not with the team at all?
I think that's weird, yeah. I agree. I think that's very strange.
I keep trying not to make, like, a big deal of it and, like, you know, overblow it, but, like, it is weird.
But he has to have special New York rehab. He can only rehab in New York. That's actually why his rehab's taking so long.
Well, the thing is, like, when players do something weird like that, you just think, like, they're going somewhere to party and, like, they're just being dumb. But I can't even imagine what Kawhi Leonard is doing in New York by himself away from the team.
Well, he Yeah, like, didn't he say he used like coupons at Wingstop and stuff? So like he's at he's at some fast food restaurant in Times Square.
Do they have Wingstop in New York?
Like, he's just having the most boring time in New York when he can meet with his taste.
He definitely loves the Olive Garden on Times Square. That's his favorite restaurant.
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine now, like, it's the night of the Spurs game, and instead of watching it, Kawhi is, like, out late at a Wingstop.
Yeah, like, if you tell me, like, some other player wasn't with the team, I'm imagining, like, they're out partying and drinking and, like, doing shit that will pop up in social media like a couple of days later. I like Kawhi Leonard is probably just at home in his hotel, just like with a bunch of food, watching some stupid boring movie.
Is it like, do you remember when LeBron would always tweet about like the NBA classic game every time the Warriors were doing something good? Was that last year or was that 2 years ago?
I think that was 2 years ago.
It's like that. Like he's actually watching like that. When Derrick Rose, the best analog of this is Derrick Rose, right? Where it's sort of he's cleared, but he doesn't feel right. Like he was with the team then, right? Even though they were, I can't remember.
Yeah, he was always at the games. Like I don't think Kawhi is there's anything wrong with him not trying to play when he doesn't feel well, because the athlete always knows his body more than like even when the doctor clears you. If something is wrong, you know when something is wrong or when you don't feel right. So that's fine. It's just the part that Whitney mentioned is like, you cannot play and still be here supporting your teammates. Like, this is still your team.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing, too, is if he had just said, like, guys, I'm done. I'm not doing. I'm shut. I can't come back. Like, I just don't feel great about it. Like, and he does that in March and he's just upfront about those intentions. I think a lot of this would be different, too, because part of the problem is that there was this on again. There's no official. It's been reported that he's done for the playoffs, but there was never any sort of official like, OK, we know we're not. We know Kawhi's not going to be there because Kawhi said so. It's been such a limbo situation as well. And it's just I'll say this. I'm a little surprised that Popovich is subtweeting instead of is using subtext if he is rather. And I think he is because you also have all this stuff with that's up to Kawhi and his team. Is that the phrase he used?
Yeah, he said you have to ask Kawhi and his group.
His group. That's right. His group. Why doesn't Pop is not exactly the type of person that would hold back like he's not a subtexter. He's a texter. Like, you would think that he'd just be honest about it. I'm a little surprised he's not just like, you know what, really disappointed that Kawhi's not here. Maybe he's going to get there. I think
there's just, like, a lack of communication between the two, between both parties, right? Like, it's just at the point now where I don't even think the two groups are talking to each other. So now there's just, like, some bitterness.
It's bizarre. Bizarre situation. Anyway, the Spurs are sad other than that.
Because I don't want to see Danny Green miss another shot. I would just like the series to be over.
Warriors got real lucky, I think, with this draw, like you said. Yeah. Real lucky.
Yeah. But at the same time, I think the Warriors were going to win their round one matchup. I think this is just another example of kind of they were going to pass whatever tests they were going to face. It just so happens to be one now that has a lot more controversy around it because of the internal situation, which is unique to the Spurs. I think we expect to have squabbles or at least communication issues between upper management and star players for most teams, not the Spurs. So for an organization to be so squeaky clean, especially with how they've handled their players, retained their talent, there's a reason we're still talking about Manu playing for the Spurs right now and not, you know, a one-year contract with another upstart team, which I know he had thought about in the offseason. But the idea is that, like, part of the uniqueness here is that Pop has not gone through this. This guy has been an incredible coach for decades now in the league, and one thing he has not really had to deal with is that course correction with a star player, that adversity when it comes to the off-the-court issues with a star. And I'm not necessarily sure he's handling it that well.
Well, that's the other thing. And I'm not sure this helps either.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. I mean, that's also why I wonder, like, why is he using subtext? Like,
right.
The other thing this makes me wonder is, like, is this something that is new for the Spurs? Or is this just something we are finally hearing about and the Spurs, like all other organizations, have been able to keep a lot of this stuff in-house? Or is it just that, you know, Pop had Tim Duncan and Tim Duncan's the most low-maintenance dude? A lot of questions.
Don't ever forget that Tony Parker got hit with a bottle in the club when Chris Brown and Drake were beefing. I just want to put that out there. We forget about this. We don't talk about this enough. I did not forget about this.
Speak for yourself, Cito. I have never forgotten about that once.
And don't forget the incident with the referee and the guns. We never forget.
Okay, that was...
Wait, what was that one again?
What?
It was a Halloween costume.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I do remember this.
Yes.
When you casually say never forget the incident with the referee.
Wasn't there a whole thing with Dan, with one of their players like wearing... it wasn't Nazi stuff, but wasn't there something like that? Like they use like some sort of Nazi slur or racist. I might be pulling this out of my ass, and if so, I'm sorry, San Antonio. But I vaguely remember there being something like this going on with them, like a few years back.
Well, all I know is that Tony Parker got hit in the face with a bottle, and then his ex-wife, his now ex-wife, told everybody that he didn't know how to have sex.
like.
Okay.
Yeah, she wrote that had to teach him how to have sex.
You kept trying to put it in my elbow.
All right. I think we need to direct this away from this.
Actually, can we talk? I don't know. We could just like talk about Eva Longoria's filmography, just like her career. Like if we're spiraling all the way over there, I think we have some Eva Longoria hot takes. What are we like? Has she peaked as an actress? Or
so, guys. The Heat Sixers series 1-1. Ben Simmons. Interesting stuff. Ben, you want to get off your rant about the referees?
No, I mean, I'm not going to blame the refs. I think that the best analogy to use another football analogy is last night's game was like one big pass interference call in the NFL, where the greatest, the best secondary in recent memory for the Seahawks, a lot of what they were able to get away with is that they would start each game at the most grabbing and the most holding and the most physicality they could put forth and work backwards from what the referees would allow, which is a really smart way to play football. And it's a smart way to play a series against someone like Ben Simmons, where you know you've got to be super physical with him. You know that at his fastest in the open court, he's almost impossible to really play against. And when he's making quick decisions while he's going fast, he's even better.
So I have a question.
Real quick.
No, it's related to what you're saying. So all that is true.
Yeah.
Why didn't anybody do it before?
Well, so we talked about this. Like, I think some teams have. Like, I think Indiana did do this to the Sixers this year. I think that Miami did do this to the Sixers
earlier
this year.
I don't know. I'm curious. Like, this is like one of the things where I feel like I'm crazy. Like, why?
Well, so just
with the way he's dominant. I mean, does this ring a bell to anyone else? Like this, I would think that it would be obvious that you would want to pressure him. But I guess everyone's so fixated on the I can't shoot thing.
Well, so yeah, that's definitely part of it. And look, Miami, when you get blown out in a game one, there are more noticeable things you can change. That's sort of the nice part about a non-competitive game, especially within a series where you know you're playing the same team as a day in between. There's also the mental aspect of coming into a game having won by 27 and coming into a game having lost by 27. And like these things matter from a professionalism standpoint and also from an experience standpoint where this is a more experienced playoff-tested team. That's number one in Miami, that is. Number two, and this is something we talked about, there was going to be a Dwayne Wade game. Wade was exceptional last night. I mean, he was straight up vintage Dwayne Wade. Now, not as much about the going to the basket or playing bully ball from the post as a large guard, but he was dead on from mid-range last night, and he hit some really difficult shots. He hit a few, they're walks, but still a nice move. It's true. It's just like
you should get on Twitter and make a very slow motion video.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm fine with that. That's a move in the NBA.
This is hilarious. I just love your posture. It's like the refs are going to call foul, or they're not going to call fouls, but it's fine. That's how it should be. Dwayne Wade is going to travel, but it's fine.
This is going somewhere. The biggest baddest guy in this series hasn't played yet, and if the refs are going to allow for this to be a physical series, I like the Sixers to be bringing back the most imposing physical person in the series, which, by the way, will mitigate the thing that has worked best for Miami in this entire series, which is Dwayne Wade was great yesterday, but it starts and stops with Kelly Olynyk providing them with a much different look and feel as a team. He's their playmaker. Now, they went to Kelly Olynyk to make the primary passing decision. I think it was in like 8 of 12 plays in a row in the fourth quarter, which is important to note because Kelly Olynyk's probably their best perimeter decision maker when when Dragic is running off ball and when Wade is running off ball. You have a guy like Olynyk who could shoot a little bit, which spaces people out, but the Sixers haven't had to make Kelly Olynyk play defense yet, which is a weakness of his in the post. And Embiid's going to make Kelly Olynyk play both parts of the court. And I think when you get into a physical series where we can then, the Sixers can then add in the most physically dominant aspect of the series, I think it actually portends pretty well for them. And it'll take some pressure off of Ben Simmons, who really has been for a month and a half now carrying an incredible load for a rookie. And there's no quotes up in the air. And so I think we somehow have forgotten a little bit of what made this team special. We forgot about the fact that when a guy like James Johnson is going to the rim with not a care in the world, and when a guy like Goran Dragic can just do little circles around the rim with not a care in the world, that there will be a very imposing top three defensive big in the NBA who will likely be back. And so I think there's like great takeaways. All the credit in the world to Spoelstra for his game plan, for forcing the Sixers into an ugly game, playing Heat basketball, and then getting a great performance out of Wade. So all the credit in the world to the Heat for winning game two. I thought they were going to win game two, as I told Mike yesterday when we left the office.
I can attest to what he said. He thought.
But on the same hand, like this series is far from over. We thought it was going to be a tight, tough physical series, and I think it's just going to move further in that direction.
All right, well, that about covers it. Does anyone else have anything to add to Ben's very long analysis of the Sixers-Heat series?
Yeah, I mean, Miami was going to win.
Yeah? For real? You're just saying that to troll, or you really believe it?
Both.
So yeah. What? Why do you think they're going to win?
I will actually say that I'm, like, there aren't many teams who have James Johnson, Josh Richardson, and Justice Winslow to throw at this, you know, just the number of, you know, Philly's so big that this is one of the few teams that has enough guards that are tall enough and big enough to kind of, you know, match those people each time down the floor. So I don't know. You know, obviously if Embiid comes back, that does change everything, and Philly probably has enough talent to beat this. But I'm impressed by Miami. Like for a team that has no quote unquote star, you know, they are as good as you can make a team like that.
I can see Ben tilting when he said impressed by Miami.
I
do
with everything Tim said. I think like part of it is like they had a superstar yesterday. He scored 28 points. He's one of the five greatest shooting guards in the history of this game, and he played like it yesterday. Now, granted, you cannot expect Dwayne Wade to be that superstar every game, but I think sometimes we just need to call it like we see it, which was an incredible Hall of Famer had a Hall of Fame performance. And did so yesterday when they needed it. And, like, that is truly the mark of a great player. And, like, I'm not someone who's been over here. Like, I'm the same person who would also tell you that, like, half the time when Dwayne Wade takes bad long mid-range shots, that portends well for the opposition because he still thinks he can hit those. But the games when he's hitting them.
He can.
Yeah, he can. I mean, when he's hitting them and he's in rhythm, like, it's not like they didn't have a superstar last night. Like, they had the best player on the court last night.
Whitney or Zito, if you were a Sixers fan, would you be mad at Goran Dragic for shooting a layup at the end of the game?
No, I'm so tired of this. Why do we get so worked up about the smallest dumb things?
Because we need something to be mad at, right? Like, what else is, like, being...
We are so mad all the time.
Yeah, it's just like, being a sports fan or even being an athlete is getting mad at the most, like, mundane...
If the Sixers want to get mad at it, like the actual players, go ahead. I don't care. But like me, I'm not going to get mad about it. How much time was left? Like
11 seconds or something. Like well, that.
It was a press break, right? I actually turned the game off by this point.
It is a playoff game, and like strange things have happened. Like, you know. Don't lose to the Miami Heat at home in game two, and then you won't have to worry about it.
It's just, I don't know. It's like with a lot of sports fans, right? Like, it's just something that they do. It's like the little disrespect things don't even affect the players as much as it does the fans who are just like so invested in it and their pride is on the line, whatever. Like when I see Sixers fans all of a sudden went from like the most lovable fan base to just, we're going to find everybody, whoever doubted the Sixers, doubted that Joel Embiid was going to play all these games, and we're going to call them out because they should have seen right into the future.
That was retweet Armageddon last year. It was incredible.
Yeah, it's like, do you guys know how ridiculous you look?
Of course, of course.
When they get mad about things like this, it's like, it's kind of ridiculous in the whole nature of this.
No,
like,
this is the beauty of this whole thing. There's a great Simpsons episode, and I know this is going to lose 90, depends on how old you are.
I was going to say, like, podcast. I would hope a lot of our listeners watch The Simpsons.
So the episode great where show. Lisa grows life out of her tooth, where she puts Coca-Cola on it and creates a little rapidly the evolving world. Do you know what I'm talking about? Okay.
She's their god.
Exactly. And Bart's the enemy, etc. Okay. Right. That right there is how I picture this Sixers team. Like, they were lovable. They've gone through the most rapid, incredibly quick evolution from like this like Neanderthal little world to like they're 10,000 years into the future overnight, because the idea that like they went from lovable to hateable before they've played even a full playoff series is like, first off, music to my ears. I love it because I think it just speaks to like, number one, how savage the entire Sixers Twitter world is. They definitely deserve the hate and love from both sides that they get. It's wild how insane they are. And the second part is like, they've really taken on, and this speaks to why, you know, Herbert wrote the piece on the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, but like, they are obnoxious. Like, I'll be the first one to admit, like, Mike over here appreciates them and also roots against them openly. And like, I get that.
Like, a lot of it is because how religious the whole process then is.
Absolutely.
Right? Because when Zilla wrote the article that the process worked, but so did all these other rebuilding efforts, right? Like the Portland Trailblazers, they were in a similar situation with the Sixers when the Sixers started the process. And other teams like that, and now they're playoff contenders. They've been playoff contenders. So it's like, yeah, the process worked, but like that's not the only way you rebuild something. The only difference is like the process has like a religious fervor to it, right?
Totally.
You believe in Sam Hinkie. You have all of this. Like, it's the identity of the team.
I mean, they literally say Hinkie died for this. Like,
that's actually really creepy.
they literally defend it as if it's like part of their identity, right? Like, totally, everybody who didn't believe in this must be publicly shamed.
Yeah.
And anybody who speaks against it or doubts us must be publicly shamed. It's ridiculous.
No, it's like you can't practice another religion. Like, you have to be a processor. It's like those holy wars process. In the Middle Ages. Like, you know, we have to proselytize these people and make them processors.
Mm-hmm.
That's so, wow.
And if you score a layup at 11 seconds, you are an enemy of the people.
Yeah, but that's just like, but that's a good point. But that ultimately is just, that happens all the time. It doesn't just happen. That happens across the NBA. It happened to the Sixers this year.
When?
Who was it? Dario dunked on some.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Like, this is just one of those.
Oh, that makes it even richer that this is a whole thing.
Yeah.
I kind of want, like, if the Heat win another one, I want, like, Dragic to do it again.
Totally. I'm fine with it. Like, the thing about that is when a regular season game, when you do that shit and you don't see a team for 2 months, it's cheap. But when you do it in a series, you're doing it for a reason. You're saying, like, I can't wait for game three. Here's a little bit of something to think about.
Do you think, like, Goran Dragic was thinking that as he, like, raced in?
Dragic is that type of, like, Dragic just doesn't have.
Oh, fuck that. Dragic is a killer, man.
He used to bring his little brother to his teams.
Yo, that's fine. But I'm telling you, sleeping on Dragic's killer edge. Like, when he got taken out,
he has an edge. I'm just,
like, this whole idea, you mentioned it with, like, Bogdanovich. And, like, this idea that, like, Europeans can't be killers, it kills me. Because, like.
I don't think is that it's Dragic can't be a killer. I just don't think, like, Dragic had any, like, animosity towards the Sixers that he just wanted to put it in their face.
I'm not saying animosity, but I'm saying thoughtful. Like, I'm saying that's premeditated. He goes down the court. Dude's been in the league for a decade.
I would think so, because, it, like, the way he was, like, going back and forth with Kevin Hart.
Yeah,
I guess,
like,
that's true.
He's trying to rub it in.
Right.
But Dragic was like, free lane to the hoop.
You take two. Just took it. Yeah, I mean, like,
maybe he had like a bonus for playoff points, and he just wanted to
If he windmilled it, if he did under the leg, toss it off the backboard, and then I'm like, all right.
This reminds me of the time that how many years ago was this when there was a Toronto Clippers, and the Toronto had blown the Clippers out, and Caron Butler was going to shake Jonas Valanciunas' hand, and instead of shaking his hand, he stole the ball and went to the lip. Do you guys remember that?
Of course.
That's perfect.
Though. That was great.
Can't do that. Yep.
If
you kind of say real quick, I'm like, in general, I hate unwritten rules in any sport. So I'll just say that, like, I'm fine with Dragic doing that. And there's game three in 2 days, you know?
See, I've actually argued against that before, which is weird for me because I usually hate unwritten rules. But, like, there's certain unwritten rules that I like. like soccer has a bunch of unwritten rules that like
sure.
I think are very compassionate things. Like yep. if an opponent is injured,
yep.
but it's not a head injury, which will force the referee to stop it, players still kick the ball out because it's like, yeah, you're injured. It's better. Like it's better if this is 11-on-11.
Right.
It's just like a very, it's unwritten. You don't have to do it, but they do it all the time.
Sure. Right. Yeah, that's true. That's probably one of the unwritten rules I do like. And as soon as you brought that up, I was like, yeah, soccer has, they have it right.
What's the difference between that rule and is it just that, I mean, in both cases, it's like kicking someone while they're down, pun not intended.
Right.
You know, it's one maybe kicking someone down while they're injured, but the other is also kicking someone down when they're about to right. lose. Like, it's right. still the well, same spirit, because, right?
Well, I wrote about that, but like, I think the difference is when you're like, if you're playing a soccer game and you're up 7-0 or 6-0, let's go back to the World Cup 2014. Mm-hmm. There's nothing stopping the team from scoring another one on you. Like when Germany was beating Brazil, they just kept scoring until time ran out. Mm-hmm. So I think it's like different where if you're down hurt, it's just a very human thing. But mm-hmm. when you're just beating them skillfully, it's like you should just be better at this game.
Yeah. Well, it's an expectation. If you're injured, yeah. you would want someone to do that for you. The difference is the end of a basketball game, you're not thinking about scoring on a team. It's yeah, but it's like the idea is like you're thinking like, well, we wouldn't do that, so therefore they shouldn't. As opposed mm-hmm. to soccer, it's like we would, therefore they should.
Right. So you're saying I'm people
a Patriots fan, so I'm used to my team blowing people out. Like this is something I deal with every year. So
oh, I'm so sorry.
What happened? Forget it. We don't think
anything. Do we think that Joel Embiid's Instagram after the game is like anything to worry about?
No.
No, I think you just have a lot of emotions.
Yeah, agreed with. I agree.
Well, you said Brett Brown handled that one really well, Ben.
He did. They asked, like, it happened before, like, Brett's post-game conference, so they asked him about it, and he was like, look, it's fine, he wants to play, and we didn't let him, and I get why he's mad.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it was actually friend of the pod, Kyle Newbeck, asked him the question, and Brett Brown looked like, you know, it's what he expected. Like, I think Brett Brown would have been, I think he said it, like, he'd be upset almost to not have Joel have that competitive streak go through him, that he wants to be a part of it. And, you know, I think the term he used the term, and I'll do my best Brett Brown impression,
do it, man.
Like,
I want to get some feedback on this.
He goes, you know, the flavor that Joel brings, you know, is a competitiveness. It's not as much that he's angry or upset. It's that, you know, there's a competitive flavor that goes through Joel. And that's what he said. That was like, that's the thing. It's like,
wait, was that your Brett Brown?
Yeah, I was going to say, can you guys rate the Brett Brown impression?
What'd you think?
You hear Whitney laughing?
It's good. Like,
No, don't influence them.
Because it's so good, right?
How many out of 10?
It was pretty good.
Yes. That's all I looked for. That's
like
all
7?
I need. That's all I need. Yeah. Well, all right. We're derailing the point here, which is like
we're only derailing the point if we're judging you. I see.
Joel's face is getting much better, and his wingspan is still impeccable. But that's my Brett Brown impression.
Does anyone else have anything else they want to talk about with the playoffs? Anything else that interests them that we have not hit yet? What is like your favorite story of the playoffs outside of the things we've talked about?
Oh yeah, we can't talk about those games, but like
the
Drew Holiday block towards the end, amazing.
Yeah, it was
I
great.
Loved it.
Drew Holiday's
and he had to stop on the fast break. Where I think it was CJ was trying to pass the ball, and he just like stuffed them on the fast break right next mm-hmm. to the.
He had three court. Plays at the end of the game too, because he also had the Lillard.
This is everything Anthony Davis did was amazing, and like he's one the biggest reason why they won. But Drew coming up like back to back to back with defensive stops like that, I was like, Jesus Christ, this guy, he really came to play this time, and I really enjoyed it.
I love a good left-handed block too. Because you go mm-hmm. up, you go up thinking I'm gonna hit with my right, and then you're athletic enough to hang and use your wingspan to get to the left. It just looks so good too.
Speaking of poetic,
it did look like Lillard was gonna help Portland win that game though.
Mm-hmm.
Like he started getting hot, and then Anthony Davis was super tired, and it's like, yeah, this is like Portland's played bad, but they're gonna get through this the same way that they get through like so a lot of their games.
Yeah,
and then. they ran a play for Pat Connaughton too. So,
yeah, I'm curious. Like, New Orleans is not playing a very long rotation, and they're working very hard. I wonder if that effect repeats itself. But I think I was saying this to you or someone. It's speaking of poetic, it's kind of poetic that Jrue Holiday had such a good game the same night the process sort of reached its new stage of with the blowout in game one.
Well, and Evan Turner's playing for Portland and Thad Young's playing for the Pacers. There's all these process pieces that were left, you know, cast aside to create it. That yeah, there's a lot of symmetry to these playoffs. There's no doubt about it.
So where's Jahlil Okafor is what I'm saying there.
isn't he going to be our summer intern, Mike?
Yeah, I think so. You'll see his byline on the website. We'll give him all the assignments that you guys
I'm not sure if he's in good enough shape to write with you guys.
Tim, what's another story in the playoffs that you've enjoying that we haven't talked about yet?
We covered most of them, I think.
Yeah.
You know.
I like basketball. Okay, cool.
You like basketball?
Yeah, I like basketball.
Yeah, I like it too. Wait, anything that we haven't covered that you're particularly you've been enjoying?
We touched on it for like a small second, but it'd be interesting. I'm still interested to see how Paul George does and how this is going to affect his choice this summer. I thought game one was good for the OKC Paul George love affair to continue. But like that's the bigger deal, though, right? Like, it's not how it's really if it's enough for him to stay is really what's going on there right now.
Do you buy his explanation that it doesn't really matter? Well, I don't even know if this is his explanation because he changes his mind every single day. But I thought at one point
he has been exposed to the world for this.
I'm
so glad.
Didn't he say at one point that it didn't matter? Like he would want to stay no matter how they did in the playoffs. I forget. I feel like that's like three Paul George turns ago.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what they do in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's about his family. Like it changes.
He's a liar, is what we're saying here. Because if it didn't matter, he wouldn't have left the Pacers. Okay,
that's true.
Although he didn't choose to go to Oklahoma City, of course.
Yeah, but like he wanted to leave to achieve something, right? Like it's not like he wanted to leave because he wanted to live somewhere else, even though Los Angeles. But
One thing I did want to mention about that series is we were talking about this at the time, and like, did it seem a little weird how Donovan Mitchell basically railroaded his way back into the game against the wishes of the trainers, and you know they're reporting that the veterans. I thought that was strange.
He was, like, visibly hobbling, and then they took him out, put him right back in. It felt really odd.
A little short-sighted, given it was game one on the road.
Well, but it was also – the other thing that, like, kind of thought it was weird about it was that Dennis Scott, I think, was reporting during the game that the Jazz veterans were the ones, like, that were, like, you got to put him back in. Like, come on. Like, Jay Crowder said something, and there was, like, a whole thing there. Like, do you guys remember this? I feel like that's what happened.
Well, they kind of need him, right?
he is like, the shot creator.
Of course, Jay Crowder wants Donovan Mitchell back in the game.
He was like visibly limping, though. It didn't look good.
And it wasn't. The game was kind of getting out of reach too. Like that, it wasn't
that's,
like
that's the point. Like you got to save your bullets for when you know you're.
So are we trying to say that Jay Crowder is not a licensed medical professional?
He's the Dr. Nick of that team.
It's a Renaissance man. Who knows what he's capable of these days?
Hey, like everybody.
Back in the day, Bill Russell would play but also coach the teams. You know, Jay Crowder is the first trainer, small forward. player trainer.
Better trainer than he is small forward. So.
How much do trainers make? That would definitely save money if you had a player trainer.
They don't make that much money.
But Jay Crowder would be the highest paid trainer in the league. We can agree on that.
Or the lowest, or you can
or the
say
best the, contract small forward.
Yeah, I was gonna say, or he's the lowest paid trainer player. Like you get the most efficiency out of how much you're paying him if you give him two jobs. But yeah, I don't know. I thought that was a little strange. But it's the same thing with Embiid though. I mean, this was Mitchell's first playoff game, and I mean, I can understand it. I thought it was strange that they so obviously just acquiesced to the wish of their emotional players and brought them back in.
Totally. Every player is going to want to play. Is going to want to play.
That's why I'm surprised that the Jazz... What's that?
I said, that's the weird thing, isn't it? You have, like, these two examples of players, like, begging to come back when they're not even... Like, when they shouldn't. And then you have Kawhi, who's like, no, I'm not risking it at all. And so you have, like... Yeah. I don't know. It's like the duality of like the sports injury, right? Like if you come and play through injury or like when you're hurt, you're this warrior, but then you also jeopardize your future. And then if you don't do it, like Kawhi, you get a longer future, but then you get people subtexting you and saying all this shit about you. So.
Did you say subtexting you? Oh, I guess subtexting you.
That's what you were using.
That's right. It does make sense as it's also, I mean, I'll admit, and then we should probably wrap this up. Like, ever since reading Tim's story on Dennis Smith and Landing, I've been freaked the fuck out that Donovan Mitchell is going to suffer a similar fate. And that's probably irrational and probably unfair, but that also informs how I feel about the story.
Well,
am I the only one that's like worried? Am I the only one that's worried about like the high flying and the Jazz history with injuries and how much he needs his athleticism to be how awesome and all this stuff? Like, am I the only one worried about this?
I'm worried that if he gets injured, Ben Simmons is going to wear a shirt that says injured ?
A definition of injury.
Right. And he's not going to be able to do anything to combat that.
Are you injured or are you hurt?
Yeah, yeah. Well, isn't that old cliche the ultimate way to sum this up? The Kawhi conflict is people don't know, except for maybe his quote unquote group, according to Pop. But alas, good. This is pretty comprehensive, given we are no more than two games into any series right now of the first round. So I'm sure we'll be having everyone back on here, Whitney, Tim, and Zito, in order to engage further in the playoffs and get you guys' thoughts as these series progress and we get further on into the conference finals, et cetera. So,
Mike, one last thing, Mike, to add this is I just didn't realize that Gordon Hayward wasn't on the Celtics bench either.
Wasn't
with Kyrie. I don't think Kyrie Irving was either.
But
he's jogging around, right?
That's not the same situation.
Okay.
All right. We saw Gordon Hayward.
Gordon has been there. He's been in the big screen, and he's been—I mean, he's participated as best he can. He went to London with Kawhi. It's not like Kawhi.
Yeah. But it's different. It's different. Also,
don't try to drag Gordon down like
that. Yeah. Gordon will be there for Game One next year, and who knows where Kawhi will be next year for Game One. So there's definitely a big difference there. But anyhow, this was a lot of fun. Thank you, everyone, for joining us here. It's Tim Cato, Whitney Medworth, and Zito Madu. Always appreciate you guys coming on and continue your great work as you continue to create that content for SB Nation /NBA during the NBA playoffs here. I'm Ben Epstein. That's Mike Prada. And this is the Limited Upside Podcast.